This is WMUK's Let's Hear It. I'm Kara Lawrence. Thanks for coming along tonight for more music of the moment in West Michigan. It will be a musical homecoming of sorts for mezzo-soprano Martha Hart, who will join musicians at the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck this Thursday and Friday evenings for a program of songs by Robert Schumann and Johannes Brahms, and the Perugino String Quartet will fill the second half with the Borodin Quartet No. 2. Let's listen to a conversation I recently had with Ms. Hart. I called her at her home in St. Louis, Missouri, where she's assistant professor of voice at Webster University. Would you give me a little refresher on your background in music and when you came up and who some influential people and programs might have been?
Well, I grew up in a musical family. I'm from Holland, Michigan, originally, real close to Saugatuck. My father was the band director at Holland Christian High School for 36 years and was kind of the band man throughout the state of Michigan and was kind of known nationally as well. My mother was a piano teacher and still is a piano teacher. So, you know, it was just around me all the time, and somewhere in high school I decided that music was what I wanted to do, but it was as a flute player. And when I got into college, I went to Olivet College in Michigan, and I started studying voice as well as flute. And the voice has just been the thing that has kind of taken off and been the thing that I love the most, I guess. So, you know, I did graduate work then at Michigan State University, so I'm definitely a Michigan product. And then my husband and I taught out in Iowa for many years, and now I'm in St. Louis, Missouri, teaching voice still and singing.
So you were really a longtime member of the musical community in West Michigan, second generation. Did your father ever split his band in half and march them from opposite sides of the town to meet in the middle, like Charles Ives' father did?
No, I don't think he ever thought about that. But they did many, many Tulip Time parades and the Memorial Day parades, and you know, went to all these various state competitions, and you know, was just a real outstanding group. And he was at the Blue Lake Fine Arts Festival for a long time as well.
Oh my goodness, he must have touched hundreds and thousands of children's musical hearts through those decades.
Very, very, very much. You know, when I think about all of the musical lives that both of my parents have touched, you know, both my dad in that large ensemble sense, plus he taught a lot of private lessons, and then my mother teaching so many different piano students and just really, you know, having a great impact on the whole musical life of that area of Western Michigan that, you know, then as those kids move on to other areas, you know, it just extends. It's quite a legacy.
Did you grow up thinking music is as much a service to others as it is personally satisfying?
You know, I don't really think I thought about that as a kid. You know, it was, first of all, playing in the band was just something you had to do. And studying piano was something you had to do when your parents teach it. But it's really kind of discovering later how much it kind of feeds your own soul. And then, you know, I have really found, you know, as I developed as an artist, how much your music making really impacts the lives of others. And you know, I think especially in vocal music, because there's text involved, there is such a communicative component of that, which just can really have a profound impact on the people listening. And you just never know what somebody is going through in their particular life journey and how some text is just going to really resonate with them. You know, so it's a very humbling kind of experience and a very humbling profession.
So what tends to catch your ear first, a great poem in musical form or the tune itself?
You know, it can be a little bit of both. With so many of the recital programs that I do, I've done thematic programs. So, you know, there's some kind of a general overlying theme. And so I really do tend to look at text first. But yet, you know, you start going through music and sometimes just some gorgeous melody will strike you and you think, oh, I've got to find a way to incorporate that into this particular recital. Or it just brings a whole new idea to you because you want to do that particular piece because you've just got to sing that melody and those harmonies and everything. So it, for me, it's really a mix of both.
Well, since I have Charles Ives on my mind after remembering his father's penchant to bring cacophony together, I've heard many singers say that Charles Ives wrote some great songs to sing. And I, along those lines, who are some of your favorite songwriters?
Well, you know, I love singing Brahms and Schumann, who I get to sing on this program. I did an entire CD project on songs of Darius Milhaud, French composer, who is not as well known or as well revered, but, you know, I found many lovely things in his works. For more contemporary composers, too, I really love the works of Jake Heggie and also Richard Hundley. But, you know, so much of what, you know, when people ask me, well, what's your favorite piece of music? I usually say, what I'm working on right now. But when it's, you know, uppermost in your mind, you know, you just, you live in the musical moment and just relish everything you're doing with that at that point.
Both Robert Schumann and Johannes Brahms adapted poetry in German to music. And what is your experience with German, the German language, and how much study were you required to do?
Well, you know, the collegiate requirements are fairly basic. You know, you need to have a good study of the language so you understand the grammar and the pronunciation and, you know, be able to read some, translate mostly. I am not a proficient speaker of either French or German that I will be singing in, but, you know, you study, at least I have studied the language at what I would say a more passive level. So working with the mechanics of it and just the essential understanding of it without necessarily having that conversational mm-hmm. kind of skill. But, you know, I have worked with native speakers in both languages to really try and perfect as much as possible what I do. It's really hard for us as United States citizens to really do these languages without, it's a little bit of an American accent, but I do my best.
Of course. The Frauenliebe und Leben by Robert Schumann, that's considered a song cycle. The poems are related, maybe with a point of view or a character. Lead me into this world of the cycle.
You know, the song cycle, as you said, has some kind of a connection. In this particular cycle, which was really the last cycle that Schumann wrote in his Year of Song, you know, 1840, when he was trying to gain permission to marry Clara Wieck, he set 8 of the 9 poems that Adelbert von Chamisso had put together telling the story of the life and love of a woman, which is kind of odd because it's a man speaking in the first person of the woman, describing her whole love story. But the poetry really does go from the very point of sort of infatuation, seeing this man for the first time and thinking, oh, he's so great, and then, oh, he notices me, and then they're engaged, and then they go through marriage, and then suddenly the next dawn she finds that she's pregnant. It's just a beautiful, beautiful setting. And then the joy of motherhood, and then all of a sudden he dies, and she experiences her first sadness. And then I think the really interesting thing about this work is that Chamisso wrote a ninth poem where the woman now, as an older woman, is speaking with her granddaughter, and I like to think on the day of her granddaughter's wedding, saying that, yes, I have been a bride like you. I have lived and loved like you. And it's kind of this whole idea that this cycle of living and loving continues. But Schumann doesn't set that poem. Instead, he has the piano return to the music of the very first song and just repeat that in its entirety. And to me, it's just a beautiful, beautiful way of making this music cyclical, so really enhancing the fact that it's a song cycle, but being able to do honor to that final text without setting a word of it. So it's just a real craft. It's just a beautifully crafted work.
About how long does it take to perform the 8 songs and the piano postlude?
It's about 20 minutes or so. So it's a hefty part of the program on Thursday and Friday nights.
How is it vocally?
You know, it's a joy to sing. There's so much variety in it. The excitement of that first discovery of love, the tender moments, looking at this ring on her finger, and especially when she talks to this man that you don't understand what this look is on my face, what this tear is running down my face. And it's that, soon there will be a cradle next to our bedside, and in that cradle will awake your image. So it's like, she's going to see his face in this child. And it's just, it's set so tenderly. So there's just really, and that's one of the beauties of a composer who does a cycle like this, because that composer really writes in all the variation, all the contrast, which, when we put a group of songs together ourselves, are looking for or doing a recital. But the composer's done it all for us here.
And this is even before Robert and Clara had any of their many children. And Robert,
exactly.
Robert was just in the throes of imagining their life together.
Exactly. And, it's so opposite from the experience of Clara, because this text talks about this, very demure kind of modest woman who lives only for her husband. And Clara was a very, very famous and accomplished concert pianist at the time. She was much more successful as a pianist than Robert was. She's concertizing all over the place instead of, being just waiting for her man to come along.
She was the one bringing in the income in the household there.
But, Schumann was, Robert was really taken by so many different texts about love and wanting things to work out. Some of the frustrations, like in Dichte Liebe, that he sets during that same year. He was really quite taken with different poetry that had some kind of love connection.
Now, the younger friend of both Clara and Robert, Johannes Brahms, he was always a bit cagey about being head over heels in love. We never really see him just giving himself up to anyone that he identifies anyway.
Right. You know, and a lot of musicologists have, you know, kind of toyed around with, well, was there really something going on with he and Clara? But, you know, nothing is substantiated in particular. And, you know, so people just like to speculate and imagine all kinds of things.
And he's not that declarative when it comes to picking out poetry either. But the two songs for alto and viola and piano that you're singing, they do have romantic subjects, right?
You know, these are just really, really lovely settings, bringing in a lot of the kind of romantic ideals. The first piece, which is translated like quelled longing, or I like to think silenced longing, you're looking to nature and you're saying, oh, it's so beautiful, and the birds are singing, and the sun is setting, and, you know, what are they saying? And well, they're putting the world to sleep. But then you look at yourself and you go, well, wait a minute, I've got all of this longing going on inside of me, and how can that be quieted? Why don't the birds and the sunset and everything, the winds, you know, silence that? You know, when is this going to happen? And it comes to the end and it says, well, when there finally is no more longing, when I don't desire to go to distant lands and all this kind of stuff, you know, when you sort of learn to be at peace yourself, it says then the birds and the winds will bring this kind of peace. But it adds the little tag that life will be over as well. So it's kind of like, you know, we're going to be longing and desiring and striving our entire lives, and the only kind of real peace comes at life's end. But in the meantime, it's just told beautifully by the viola and the voice of the piano combined together, and just wonderfully descriptive. The second piece is actually a German translation of a Lope de Vega, Spanish poet. He's about the silencing the winds. So again, you know, you've got this wind thing going on between the two pieces. And in this one, it's like the Mary, the mother of the Christ child, asking the angels to still the winds because her child is trying to sleep. And, you know, talking about how, oh, all the burden of the world already is upon this child, and the only peace that he really experiences is in sleep. And so, still the wind. And the viola makes use of the little Josef Liebe, Josef Mein, carol in the background. So, it, again, it's just a beautiful, beautiful marriage of these different musical and textual ideas.
You have a couple of wonderful musicians, possibly old friends, to perform with. I know Joan Conway has a great affinity for Brahms and has long performed at the festival. Have you performed with her before?
Several times. She has actually, when she was still a professor at Hope College, she brought me in and we did a recital together, and then we've done several recitals on the various afternoon programs that she did first at Herrick Public Library in Holland, and then at a program called Free at Three in First Reformed Church in Holland. And then I performed about 6 years ago now, I guess it is, 5 or 6, at the Saugatuck Chamber Music Festival, again with her. She's just such a wonderful artist and is so sensitive with art song and chamber music. So it's always a real joy to work with her.
Yeah, talk about having a legacy and touching many musicians' lives in West Michigan over the decades.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
And Eric Tanner, who's a member of the Perugino String Quartet, will also join you with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nicely balanced program of song in the first half, and then the famous String Quartet in D major, number 2 by Alexander Borodin, in the second half. The story goes with the String Quartet number 2, Alexander Borodin wrote that as a love letter to his wife. And you know, after looking at all of the unabashed love on this program, we seem to be living in an age where we can't express these great emotions that take you to extremes as people could 200 years ago.
Well, you know, in the romantic age too, you know, the poetry was kind of newly expressive. It was so individualistic, you know, really discovering our connection with nature and, you know, all of these profound, profound feelings. You know, and it's just amazing how it inspired so many composers then to really do great, great justice to those emotions in their musical settings that just, I think, heighten the emotional impact of the text even more. And I think that's why I love art songs so much. It's just that marriage of poetry and music that is just a great uplifting combination.
Martha, I think we can leave it there. Thank you very much for your time today, and I hope you have a wonderful evening, two evenings of song at the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck.
Okay, thank you.